I probably can't say your...
Okay, that's fine. If you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
I try.
But obviously, if there are complaints, they need to be taken seriously.
Okay.
If someone in a position of power has a complaint, they need to be taken seriously.
This man from BBC, he's buying my nudes.
Oh.
No, I'm joking. Sorry. Okay. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does with me, your host Bio, where we talk about what your best friends do so you don't have to. Today, I'm joined by my best friend, the business owner, Joanna. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? I really like that introduction. I was speaking to a friend yesterday and he said, if anyone ever comes to me and starts talking to me about what they do in their job, I'm just like, I don't want to hear that. That is so like boring. So when you just said... I ask what your best friend does. So you don't have to. I was like, that's actually a real thing that irritates people, genuinely.
This is why we're going to go clear.
A real thing.
But yeah, Joanna, we always start with a nice little icebreaker.
Okay.
What did you want to do growing up?
When I was a child, I wanted to be Michael Parkinson.
Michael Parkinson? I have idea who that is.
Really?
No.
We're in the same age range.
No, we are.
Maybe we're not. So Michael Parkinson was like he started off as a journalist in the newspapers,
okay.
Yorkshire man. Mm-hmm. And then he started to have a programme which was like the Michael Parkinson, I don't know if it's called the Michael Parkinson Show, quote me, but it was a show with Michael Parkinson.
Okay.
And he sits in the seat like you do.
In the hot
seat.
And
he interviews, the hot seat. And he interviews like really interesting, fascinating people.
Okay, so he was like the yesteryear Stephen Bartlett, was he? Or like Louis Theroux?
Potentially bigger.
Potentially bigger?
In my humble opinion.
Wow.
And I love Stephen and I love Louis Theroux.
Okay.
But in my humble opinion,
yeah.
He was like, it would be like on his show, this is going to sound like I'm suggesting those others can't get these people, and I'm sure they can and will, but like he would have like Muhammad Ali.
Oh, wow.
Like Bette Midler. Like,
okay.
You know, like in the beginning, it was those big Hollywood heavyweights, whether they're in like film or sports or entertainment. As time went on, he'd start to have people like David Beckham, Victoria, but you know, like a bit more kind of contemporary like icons. But like it was, I mean, when people were famous for like seriously...
For being the best at what they do.
Basically. Like,
yeah, I hear you.
Like seriously talented like...
Individuals.
Yeah.
So that's what you wanted to do. And
I wanted to, as a mixed race, mixed heritage, young girl, I wanted to be a white Yorkshireman. But I wanted his job. Like,
okay, there we go.
I wanted his job.
Just, okay, I'm glad we could clear that up. So you wanted to be Michael Parkinson or you wanted his job, but you're a business owner.
Yeah.
And I know, speaking to you, yes, you're a business owner, but there's many facets to that.
Yeah.
And it's all underpinned by this mission that you have. So my first question to you is, you know, what is that mission? And can we explain it to the listener?
Yeah, sure. So I have a real issue with things that aren't fair.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of my like personality. And unfortunately, there's not much I could do about it. So I've had to kind of find roles where I could, I guess, work to my personal strengths, which is this thing around like unfairness.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is I really find it difficult to accept when the playing field isn't level.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I want it to be level so that everybody gets an opportunity to compete.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we haven't leveled the playing field, so there's only some people that can compete. And if there are other people that have competed, the barriers at which they have to overcome are sometimes so difficult and so challenging that even if they do overcome them, like it's it just feels like they could have been removed. It could have been made a lot easier for us to get to the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about that specifically in the world of like the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So if we, you know, I run a business and I'm really cognizant of the fact that you're only as good as your people. Mm-hmm. Any business is only as good as its people. So really, I just want the best people working with me, as do as do most organisations, right, to drive up their profits. So I guess what I'm saying is that you won't ever really know if you've got the best people, or certainly from the best pool, if you haven't ensured that all the best people could fairly attempt to compete for a role.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that I want to take from one person and give it to another. I want to ensure that we've all got what we need to be successful at competing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, amazing. And then as part of that mission, to be fair, I know that, you know, you hold various roles such as commissioner. Wait, is that commissioner for City of London?
I was going to say Port Bios, got to remember all these things.
Yeah.
So no, the commissioner's for the civil service.
Commissioner for civil service.
There was common councillor is for the City of London.
Common councillor for City of London, amongst many other more. And I just wanted to use that to say, talk us through your journey to this point. And yeah, how you obtained all of these different roles.
Okay, so that's a big question. So I'll kind of be quick and then get, so I can get to the specifics. So mm-hmm. In the beginning, I wanted to be Michael Parkinson.
Yeah.
so I went down the route of doing lots of work experience in magazines because mm-hmm. I didn't have the confidence to be on screen. Okay. So I thought, but what he does is he interviews really interesting people. So I thought I could do that in a magazine. No one has to know who I am.
Yeah.
Right. So I started off on that road and I ended up being successful going down that route. And I was a journalist for about a decade.
Oh, wow.
But at the same time, as being a journalist, I recognised, so I started doing work experience about 16, 17, and I recognised that there were barriers for people from what we call now socioeconomically diverse backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So people that were necessarily from a home where their income was below a particular threshold, it was really challenging for them to get into the creative industries, but specifically into journalism. And so while I was pursuing that, while I was still studying at university and my master's and things, I basically set up a charity
mm-hmm.
with seven friends, which was actually launched by a good friend called Samuel Kasumu,
mm-hmm.
It's called Elevation Networks Charitable Trust. And we were all at university when this kicked off.
Oh, wow.
He was at Brunel, I was at Reading, others were at like Queen Mary, others were at Imperial. And we all kind of had this shared mission of leveling the playing field for people that came from homes and backgrounds like ours. I guess we were thinking specifically at that time largely about class, and the intersectionality of that obviously encapsulates ethnicity, disability, many other groups, and so of individuals. And so what happened was that now it still exists. It's called Inclusive Boards. So they've sort of graduated into various things. Sam's probably an interesting person you should have on the podcast, to be honest.
Noted.
And then after that, I set up Shine Media. Mm-hmm. And that was specifically an organisation that was focused on levelling the playing field for talent from what we would have called back then underrepresented backgrounds. I prefer that to terms like disadvantaged, deprived. So I didn't feel disadvantaged. I didn't feel deprived. Mm. I just say that in the workplace, they were underrepresented. So yeah. I'm a bit more comfortable with that terminology.
100%.
That's what we set out to do. So we provided education and training for people from various walks of life by partnering with a number of different charities and organisations. So it might be a charity that supports people that have had a criminal conviction. They might be a care leaver.
Mm-hmm.
They might be somebody with a disability, somebody who is neurodivergent, for example. We'd mm-hmm. partner really carefully with organisations that were really in the weeds of the challenges that individuals were facing.
Yeah,
we would that's why it's called Shine. It's really cheesy, but we would like polish up their skills so that they were in a position to present them to businesses in a way that would allow them to gain employment. Well, what happens is if you came through Shine Media, it was because I was kind of giving back. And so when you came through Shine Media, you also had to give back. So mm-hmm. I was trying to create a movement of people that were trying to create more leaders as opposed to I'm the famous one, look what I've done.
Yeah,
it was more about an attitude to us all kind of like progressing, basically.
Yeah, amazing.
And so that's how it was all happening. So at the same time as running, as being a journalist, and I was a journalist at lots of the women's magazines, so the Cosmos, the Closers, the Now magazines, for my sins, all the women's like consumer magazines. I know I'm blamed for many problems in the world, but I was like the entertainment reporter, the news reporter mm-hmm. for those, and I would also write for the tabloids, again, for my sins. But at the same time...
Not the Daily Mail. Oh, my God! No judgment.
So basically what would happen was I'd spend all day like as a journalist, and then in the evening I'd go to my little shared space and I'd be supporting people into work, and okay. I was running this business. And so as time went on, I'd been running Shine Media for probably 8 years. I was like a friend of Elevation Networks, if you like, but they went on their journey. And we won lots of awards. We made very little money. I was actually using my money to from my sort of entry-level salary to keep it all going, just to sort of build it up and build a profile and a reputation of like being able to deliver on this. Mm-hmm. And then in 2016, a FTSE 250 company called S3, that are basically a tech recruiter, a global tech recruiter, the CEO at the time, Gary Elden, who is a dear friend, like, amazing person, met me at an event, and I was telling him about what I do, mm-hmm. Shine Media, and he couldn't believe that as a result of like the work I'd done, we'd placed about 3,500 people into work over 8 years.
Wow.
So he was like, well, if she's sort of able to do that with no resource, like her laptop in like a shared hot desk in space at one point, but my bedroom in the other time, then she should be here in this big recruitment bubble. And so we worked out to a partnership. So we launched a brand called Hayden, mm-hmm. and that focused more on the executive search space. Mm-hmm. So executive search is essentially what it says. So it's searching for the executives. So that chief executive, that C-suite, if you like.
Is that from underrepresented backgrounds?
Yeah. Okay. So what we were trying to do was basically challenge who was sitting at board level, whether it was a public company or a limited company or a public service, like the civil service. What we were trying to do is ensure that those that were making the key decisions mm-hmm. within an organization were diversified. Mm-hmm. Essentially, they were from a really broad range of backgrounds. So we used really inclusive processes to do that. And then we also recognized that there was a challenge within organizations, as I'd kind of experienced and as he had, you know, you don't become sort of a mixed heritage global CEO without a few challenges along the way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we understood the cultural challenges that there are when you're in an organization and you are wanting to show up as yourself and bring all the skills and expertise that you have that are relevant and to your specific background and lived experience, but feel maybe that there's other challenges that are going on in the workplace. And so you can't always bring that to the workplace. So we had this, it was executive search, and the consultancy was around creating a culture in which people felt they could thrive. And so I did that for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. Gary moved on. And at the same time, I got a sort of I went to a dinner, and an investor was sat next to me who I had no idea was an investor. I mm-hmm. thought he ran a charity. Turned out to be incredibly wealthy, but I was just so inspired by him and what he was doing with the charity to mm-hmm. help individuals. I can talk about that in a bit. But and he and I stayed in touch, and then he invested some money in me so that I could launch my business, which we did. We got hit by COVID.
Oh.
And so we had to kind of reposition and think about how that business was going to work, basically. Mm-hmm. And so we no longer sort of worked together formally, and then I continued to build the business through that not great time. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, it began to sort of pick up enormously in terms of impact again, which was brilliant. And then just as all that was going on, if you can imagine, that's 18, I'm 36 now, so that's a long time to be in lots of rooms, lots of dinners, lots of conversations, central to a lot of senior discussion. Mm-hmm. And so I then, one of my very good friends was a commissioner for the civil service, and they asked me to come in and run some training for the away day. Mm-hmm. And the first commissioner, which means the chair of that board, sort of made a joke when I did my presentation and the training and was like, I think we've got a first commissioner on our hands. And I was thinking, it's so funny because I'd not thought about it. Mm. I'd never thought about it. Mm. But he said that one off-the-cuff joke. He's a lovely, lovely man, Ian. And I stayed in touch with him, and I just said, I really want to be a commissioner. Mm. Like, I've understood what you do and the influence you can have. In this city, there is the Lord Mayor, who's like, so there's the City of London has its own like local authority, if you like. Mm-hmm. So it's not governed necessarily by Sadiq. They're quite separate, although they work collaboratively. So our Lord Mayor has an appeal, a trustee appeal. And I spoke at an event, and one of the directors at the time of that appeal was in the audience and asked to meet me for a coffee and asked me to be a trustee of that charity.
Wow.
So I became a trustee of the Lord Mayor's appeal. They did incredible work. I threw myself into it. I reluctantly stepped down as a trustee because of time constraints. Mm. I say reluctantly because I try not to get emotional even suggesting that, reflecting on the fact that I've stepped down, because I truly, truly feel really strongly about the work that the Lord Mayor's Appeal does. But that's how I got introduced to the City of London.
Mm-hmm.
So I was only giving you all of that to understand how I like would even know about the commissioners.
Yeah.
How I then got introduced to the City of London. I didn't know there were livery companies in the City of London. I didn't know there were wards in the City of London. I didn't know it had its own mayoralty. I didn't know any of that. So just by...
I still don't know this, by the way, even though you're saying it. This is me.
So your office is in a ward that has a councillor.
Wow, I did not
know. Yeah, right? Okay. So it's... It's really interesting, basically. Yeah. And so that's how I learned about these things. And then I wanted to go down those roads because the City of London is the financial capital. It's where many of the relationships are held with other really huge financial capital. So if you're thinking about power, influence and wealth, like it's career capitalist society, it is wrapped up in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking, well, how do I level the playing field in that space?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was involved in that. And in the civil service, it was, as a commissioner, ultimately it's your job to regulate the civil service. That means that we, as commissioners, we chair competitions and complaints that are made within the civil service. So a competition is essentially a recruitment process.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're recruiting for a new director across the civil service or a director general or a perm sec, that needs to be done in a fair, open and based on merit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important because they go on to be architects of society. They go on to determine how our defence systems work, our justice systems, our education, our healthcare. And so when you're going to go in and have such a senior role, we need to ensure that that recruitment process was open,
mm-hmm.
that it was fair,
mm-hmm.
and it was based on merit. And it wasn't because Bayo and Joe were friends from back in the day.
Yeah,
I got him a job. Mm-hmm. So those were things that I feel like if you're influencing society and you want to at a very high level, then you need to be a part of those environments.
This, what an answer, can I just say? And thank you for bringing us up to speed. As you spoke about your experiences, there's a few things you said off the cuff. Like one was like, yeah, I was at a dinner and I sat next to an investor. Another was, yeah, one time I was given a talk and then this person, you know, approached me after. How are you getting invited to these dinners?
Mm.
How are you giving these talks? Like, it doesn't just happen. And even like getting the role of commissioner, right? You can't just go, oh, I want to be commissioner. And they go, okay, here you go.
No.
I'm sure there's a process to it. So I know you've kind of talked about it off the cuff, but diving a little bit deeper, how are you, you know, such a social butterfly and getting into these rooms?
Friends think this is a bit much, but like, I start the year with, what do I want?
Mm-hmm.
What do I want to say on New Year's Eve, like at the end of this year?
Okay.
And so then what I do is I'll say, like, I want to have done these five things. And so then I break the year into quarters. And then I break those quarters into months and then into weeks and then into days. Yeah. So I know how I should be spending that time. So if I, for example, want to, if I learn last year that there is a commissioner, that first, and I think actually I'm interested in that, that first quarter, I will get in touch with all the existing commissioners and say, what is your job? What does it involve? What are the fallbacks? And when I say what does it involve, I mean, how much of my time? How much power do you really have? How much impact do you have? How do you measure the impact?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of those questions I would spend my time doing. I'd find out like where they might be, and I would try to have a chat with them and find out a little bit more. I'm just very proactive about what it is that I'm trying to achieve. And I have to do that because life happens in between all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm not intentional about those things, I could get swept up in anything that happens to me in that year. So I have to be really intentional. So if I go specifically to how did I end up talking at this event where I then got asked to be the trustee? Well, I was at S3 running Hyden, and because there had been some press around the launch of Hyden, the Lord Mayor's appeal had heard about the fact that the S3, this big corporate organisation, was in the city and had a focus on diversity, equity and inclusion. So they got in touch with HR and invited them to come come and be a part of their sort of, they sponsor, you could, as a corporate, you can sponsor a number of roundtables.
Mm-hmm.
So I was invited to that meeting. And then as I was talking to the representative from the appeal with one of the HR representatives at S3, I obviously, because I care so much, was saying loads about the issue of equity, diversity and inclusion.
Mm.
And so they said, you talk a lot about social class and social mobility. We've got a breakfast that's talking about that. Would you come and talk about it? And so I said, yeah, I don't mind doing that. I've never been afraid to share the realities of like my lived experience. So I'm going through a magistrate's process, because that's another thing that I'm quite interested in. But in order to...
are you going to wear the wig? Is that what the magistrate says, or am I making that up?
Magistrates don't wear the wig.
Okay,
sorry. I don't think they've worn a wig. I don't think they wear a wig.
No. Okay,
when my cool. observations...
I'm making it up.
I don't think they had wigs.
Okay.
But I asked when I was at events and I was at dinner, for example, and someone next to me said they're a magistrate, I'd be like, oh, what do they do and how do they do it and what influence do they have and what's the process like and what's happening? I'd just ask loads of questions. Mm. So then I went off and... Google is your friend. You know what I mean? You go off and find this information out. And then when you have more questions, you go, do you mind if I ask you a question about that? So I think be present, enjoy it, get to know the people around you. But again, if you hear something that's interesting, don't just sleep on it. Mm-hmm. Like, you can sleep on it to have a think and mm-hmm. consider it, but don't sleep on it. If it gets you like all excited and thinking, I think you should explore it.
Okay. So what I've taken from that is be intentional, right? It sounds like with the intention, maybe you've got to do things off your own back and not expect anything, because
definitely
with all the research and going to these dinners and stuff, I'm assuming you're not getting paid for your time, right? So like, you're going and there isn't an expectation. So be intentional and don't go with any expectations, and you've got to do it on your own dime, off your own back.
So this is how it kind of works, and this is why I say you just have to be yourself. So I'll give you an example. I spoke at that event, The Power of Inclusion breakfast. One of the directors of the appeal was in there and spoke to me about whether I'd consider being a trustee. I went through an inclusive process to become a trustee.
Yeah.
I then became a trustee. Once you're on the board...
What's an inclusive process? Sorry, I've got to stop you there.
So that means like... I went through a process. He didn't tap me on the shoulder and go, I like you, do you want to be a trustee? Okay, start Monday.
Yeah.
I went through a recruitment process.
Okay.
As did other people, and I competed fairly.
Okay.
And that's important to me, for me to say that, because I'm not telling companies to do something that I'm then asking for nepotism
exactly.
in myself.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
So I went through a process, and then I was appointed along with other people.
Wow.
When you then joined the Lord Mayor's appeal, at the time, there were three aldermen who were all about to become Lord Mayors in succession. So they took an approach which was, as the three of us, we're going to come together and we will be Lord Mayors one after the other. And when I say aldermen, so in the City of London, you have the mayor, mm-hmm. you have sheriffs, mm-hmm. you have aldermen, mm-hmm. and then you have the common councillors. I didn't know this. I knew nothing about this. It's just what came up.
That's what this podcast is for, because I have no idea.
I learned about this through being on the board. So when I got there, I was sat with the current Lord Mayor, the two aldermen, other people from the City of London Corporation, and then us people from, like, there was someone else that were from...
Serious question.
Yeah.
Were all these people white, middle-aged men?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because as you say, aldermen, this man, there that is, man.
There are a large proportion
okay.
of aldermen who are white male. We are,
we are
getting better at diversifying that. And if I'm really honest, the white males are driving that,
okay.
which is great, I think.
Yeah.
So we do have female alderman, Baroness Patricia Scotland, who's also head of the Commonwealth.
That's my friend's mum.
Yeah, see? Oh, she's lovely, very lovely.
Jackson Mawinda?
Yeah, okay. She's an alderman.
Okay.
She may have had to step down, actually, when she became part of the Commonwealth, but she's an alderwoman.
Okay.
So that's what I mean. But we have got that diversity there, as I say, but it could always improve, right?
Yeah.
And so that's how I learned, for example, that there are Lord Mayors and aldermen sitting at that table listening. And when I turned up at that table, trust me, it's in Mansion House. It's grand. They use language that's different to the language I use.
Yeah.
Many would have been from Eton, like it's a total different culture, but they're warm, nice, educated people that want to hear your opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And only that, they have been champions of your opinions. They've created opportunities for visibility for me and others,
mm-hmm.
and they've been allies. And so one of our former Lord Mayors, Sir William Russell, was one of the aldermen and on the board, and he told me about livery companies. And there are many livery companies in the City of London.
What is a livery company?
It's really interesting. I should have looked up a formal like definition because I don't know the answer. Formal like definition. I can talk to you about how I would describe them.
Yeah.
So there's livery companies that make up the City of London based on how the City of London used to be ran a long time ago. It's really embarrassing because there's a phrase for this, but there's 12 that are kind of like at the top of all, if you had like a league list, there's 12. One of them is the Haberdashers Company, which is it the Great 12 or the Great 14? I'm so bad. See, guys, I'm learning as I go. Always learning. But we're one of those.
Okay.
And it's the Haberdashers Company, and their focus is on education. Mm-hmm. But you have grocers. Mm-hmm. You have the Worshipful Company of International Bankers.
Okay.
So like they're companies, clubs, if you like, that have an interest in a particular subject. And in the instance of, I'm really sorry to the City of London Livery Companies, of the terrible way I've just described.
But what
livery companies?
So, I know. So okay, that's what they are.
Can I tell you them, and then you put it in the notes on the video?
Yeah. I'm going to put the Wikipedia.
So I represent it accurately. But so the Haberdashers Company, which is the one I'm at, our focus is around education. So we have schools. So we have the Haberdasher Asks schools, both state schools and private schools.
Mm-hmm.
So how I then would even get invited to a dinner is because I became a Freeman at the Haberdashers Livery Company.
Then
I became a livery woman. And so you can become a governor of a school. You can get really involved in the various activities that company does.
Sorry, I'm cutting you up because as you say all these names, are any of these roles paid at any point?
No, they're not full-time roles.
Okay. So is it like volunteer?
If you're a governor of a school, you're not paid.
Yeah.
So exactly. All it is that you're part of this livery and you want to support the efforts of that livery because it's important to you.
Yeah.
So the reason I want to touch on this is because it's as time consuming as you allow it to be.
Mm.
You have to set your time boundaries. But if you're really keen to support the education and become a governor of schools local to your area, for example, and you can go and do that via a school, or you could do it for your livery. So when I say I was at a dinner, you're just invited to a dinner that you can go to or not go to.
Yeah.
And the reason I would go is, one, I'd like to have a chat with the head teachers because I care about the school I'm a governor of, and some of the senior leadership that maybe I don't get to see all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But also the students come, so they get to see you do, and you get to tell them all that you do, and then they get some visibility of a you.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you're sat next to, like, in business anyway, like I sit next to people that like build planes, like, and like own dinosaurs in museums. Like, I get to meet the most like fascinating people, and I love learning. I can't go to all of them. I've got like a family and a life and stuff, but I go to things that I think that would be really interesting. For example, in the City of London, we have a dinner every year to celebrate our armed forces, but equally all of our queens, well now, King's judges. I'm obsessed with crime. Novels, docs, podcasts. Of course I'm going to go to that. I'm going to sit next to the judges and ask them about, so did you judge that case? And like, so you don't have to go to these things, but like, I have an interest in law. I have an interest in human rights. So I would want to go and sit at that dinner. Do you know what I mean?
Sense. You've spoken about so many different jobs there. This has been great. So for Joanna,
mm-hmm.
what does like a typical day and a typical week look like for you?
Okay, so I run, first and foremost, I run Blue Moon and Partners, which is exec search and equity, diversity, inclusion consultancy.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the priority every day. Around that, I am a commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the commissioner requires a lot of your time, but because I run a company and we've got partners, I can divide my time between the two.
Mm-hmm.
The commissioner role is a paid role. And then the City of London councillor work, that is a number of committees that you advise and shape to ensure that, and the committees I sit on, for example, are the Education Board, Homelessness and Rough Sleeping, Children's and Community Services. I sit on those because I care about those issues
mm-hmm.
in the city. Now, they happen monthly, some of these meetings, or quarterly. Mm-hmm. So that it's the same as if you took on any non-exec role. Mm-hmm. And so I have a proportion of my portfolio that are paid non-exec roles and a proportion that are not. Mm-hmm. Thankfully and fortunately, I can afford to do that. Mm-hmm. The bit that becomes challenging is I can only afford to do that in this latter part of my life, because I've built a business that allows me to financially be able to do more. And that's the challenge with these places, is that if you are from a background like mine, you can't do all this free stuff, right? That in itself is not leveling the playing field.
Yeah.
That is what excludes people from being part of these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a trustee at the Lord Mayor's Appeal when I was on a very good salary in a corporate.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah,
so
you have to
find a way to still do the things you love, that without it coming at at such a cost to your like well-being. There are people out there that are still wanting, they want properties, they want to travel, you have hobbies and whatever. So we live in a world where everything costs money.
Mm.
So I'm not suggesting by any means that I've got a portfolio that is like purely volunteering, because that would not be honest. And I can afford to do those things.
You know, you've mentioned the fact that, you know, Blue Moon is a priority, being a commissioner is a priority. First off, what is the commissioner's role about?
It's purely regulating the civil service. That means...
Yeah.
So,
you saw the way I looked at you.
So in answer to your question, that's the priority, because I realised I was explaining a lot. But so how I spend my day is business first, commissioner, and other things fit around that.
Okay, yeah.
So you got the Queen.
The King.
Sorry, it's because the Queen appointed me. The King. Sorry, you got the King. And he, obviously... We are run by a sovereign.
You met Liz, RIP.
No.
Okay.
No.
You're not allowed to admit it.
Okay. No. I've never.
I haven't met you in trouble.
Essentially, the commissioner role, you are appointed by the Queen or King.
Okay.
So the recommendations go to the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister takes them to the Queen or King, and they then say, "Okay, we're cool with Joe doing that role."
Yeah.
The point of that is because there's the civil service that is basically the King's government. And so they need to also be regulated. They can't just do, you know, what they want. So when it comes to particular positions that are very senior, that are going to be very influential in shaping the way that society goes and policy goes, that needs to be done in a fair and open way and based on merit. Mm-hmm. Equally, if you're complaining, so it's complaints and competitions, they need to be chaired in a fair and open way.
What's an example of a complaint? Are you allowed to say? I'll put you on the spot.
I probably can't say.
If you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
I try.
But obviously, if there are complaints, they need to be taken seriously.
Okay.
If someone in a position of power has a complaint, they need to be taken seriously.
This man from BBC, he's buying my nudes.
Oh,
no, I'm joking. Sorry. Okay.
That's what the role is, basically. And what it means is a role comes up, whether it's a director, DG, PermSec, and you are supposed to essentially liaise with those departments to make sure that there's a fair recruitment process, that it's open, that it hasn't disadvantaged anyone, and that when we then choose and when they're appointed, they ultimately the hiring manager makes that decision, but we are there to
inform
and make sure it's done the right way.
Okay.
We're there to chair it, to make sure it's done in the right way. And then when that appointment is made, we need to be absolutely satisfied that it's been done based on merit.
And then, so you've mentioned, yeah, Blue Moon, commissioner priorities, everything else kind of fits around that.
What I should have probably said though, because for people listening, is so for in April of 22 last year, I took on an interim role at the BBC as their head of creative diversity.
Another role. Look, this woman, you're really making me think about what I do on a day-to-day basis.
No.
I'm going to stop going to gym. No. Damn.
It sounds more, but I think maybe because I'm so used to it.
And you've been doing it a long time
as
well, right?
Yeah, I'm used to it. I'm used to it. But maybe to somebody else, it's like highly overwhelming because it's lots of names and titles. But I think I've just like tried to learn as I go. I'm even making like mistakes now, probably.
No, 100%.
But, so typically with Blue Moon, we would embed ourselves into an organisation for a period of time. And so when I was asked to work and support or to go in and think about taking an interim role at the BBC, I did that because the period of time would have been the kind of time I would have spent with another organisation when we look at workplace culture.
Mm-hmm. Which is very topical considering what's going on at the moment in the BBC. Dirty buggers.
So then, so it was really important to me. So then I finished the interim and I had no intention really of staying on. But the business and external stakeholders were like, you should really. So I applied, thorough process, and then I was appointed. So I did it for another year. And
and this role was head of creative diversity.
Which case meant that Blue Moon, I couldn't run that because when you work in a role at the BBC, you can't take income from other places.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if any income?
You've got to be really careful about it. Like, they're very, you have to be really careful about it.
Do you know what? To be fair, a lot of companies are actually like that. So I've had contracts before where, like, anything you do in work hours is considered their IP, intellectual property. So, yeah, they never really want you working multiple jobs. Although it's like a lot more of a thing in America, people working multiple jobs. But anyway, sorry, BBC. Yeah,
and also, and because I was a commissioner, I was appointed as a commissioner in June of that year, and I was in the interim role in April of that year. So you also have to be really careful because they're closely linked, the BBC and the government. So I had to keep our impartiality.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't, for example, do any appointments related to the DCMS.
Department
for Culture, Media, Digital and Sport. Okay. Because that's related to somewhere I directly work.
Conflict of interest.
Yeah, so you have to be really, really careful also about those appointments, public appointments, and they both were. So, and then so I stayed on. And then on the 3rd of July this year, as in like a couple of days ago, weeks ago, I stepped down from that role to go back to my business.
Okay.
I just thought it was worth saying that because people were like, but she's been there for a year. She hasn't been back in a blue moon.
And so you said you'd made a lot of progress at the BBC. Yeah. Why was now the right time to step down from the role? Are you allowed to talk about it?
Yeah. I'm actually really sad that I had to step down from the role, if I'm honest. But it was the right time because autonomy is important. And where you place diversity, equity and inclusion in a business is really important. One, for its impact and its effectiveness, but also like to get the most value out of it. And I could make tremendous amounts of progress there, which we had, and we've got this creative diversity plan that will come out and lots of other things that will, I'll continue to work at the BBC, that we will do. But what I found really tough at times is the level of layers in an organisation. And I understand why those layers are there, because the BBC is owned by us, right? We pay a licence fee. It's ours. That's why people feel so strongly about it. And so I understand why there's those layers. But I think when it came to this particular piece of work that I was doing, which is ultimately to ensure that every licence fee payer feels the value of the BBC, mm-hmm. wherever they are across the UK, which means that the content has to be representative of everybody. Mm-hmm. And also that suppliers who make our programmes feel that they've got equitable ways to do that. Mm-hmm. So what it needs is agility, flexibility, speed, accountability, transparency. And I'm not suggesting that it doesn't have that, but I think where that role sits organisationally slows that progress down.
Oh, no.
And so actually as a consultant, I can get back to that really. I can get back to the progress and the pace at which the broadcasting industry needs the BBC to move.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like it didn't feel like the right thing to do because I was sad not to be in the role doing it, but it felt like the right thing to do for the audiences and the suppliers.
So basically what I've heard from that is by moving out from under them, you've got more autonomy to make quick decisions. Mm. Whereas working for them directly, things took a long time and maybe you'd be steered away from things that you actually want to do. So in light of that, my next question is like, what other barriers and challenges have you faced on your mission in the various roles that you're working with regards to making everything more equitable and fairer for people?
I think bureaucracy, like work politics. I don't do that. I don't do work politics. I'm very like direct.
Mm.
And so I found myself feeling a bit naive because I'm taking what you're saying as the truth.
Mm.
Someone once said this thing to me about some of the organisations that I've worked with as clients, which was sometimes someone is literally going, yeah, like while they're talking to you, and actually not just not doing what they're saying, but actually doing all the things the opposite of what they're saying.
Yeah.
And it took me ages for that to land, because I thought that if Bayo's saying this to me, that's what he thinks. Mm. That's what he's going to do. And like, I think because I came from, like, I'm a bedroom business owner. I came from like my bedroom, my own values. Mm. I just assumed that everyone had that same way of like, well, why would they lie to me?
Yeah.
I haven't lied to them. So I think that naivety can still present itself even at 36. Mm. And sometimes it's not until you see the structure of something or the process of something that you realize you could just change it,
mm.
right? And you're concerned with the wrong thing. Yeah. My partner says this all the time, you're focused on the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But like, I often find myself in businesses going, you're focused on the wrong thing.
100%.
So I'll give an example, like one of the businesses I work with, for example, uses this system. It's an ineffective system. It's an ineffective system for all the core customers mm-hmm. of this system. But nobody wants to be the first to step out of that core
yeah.
because of the optics of that.
Yeah.
And I think, I guess my challenge is, which is where it comes, where I come in, where I start to talk about like the integrity bit and mm-hmm. and the, as I say, the naivety is, for me, the worst optic is being part of an ineffective system.
Yeah.
So yep. for me, I'd be like, I think if you explain why you're leaving this, yeah. like the people that are the stakeholders, the beneficiaries of that would really respect you for looking out for them.
Mm.
But I think people are more concerned with optics
100%
then like, but I think I don't, it sounds stupid like when I say that out loud, I think sometimes I'm like duh, right? But like, I think when I'm in the bit when I'm in a business setting, I'm like, no one's here listening to us, like why are you
doing this,
why are you lying? Like, no one else is here. I think like, why can't we just cut to it? Like,
yeah,
I think I've got that's a challenge I find in, which is why I feel like it was, I prefer to work with people that are aligned with those values.
There's a few things I want to say on that. First is, I think the saying goes, listen not to what they say, look at what they do,
mm.
which basically don't listen to their words, sweet words, look at their actions,
mm.
right? Because actions speak louder than mm. words. And then secondly, just to add another example, I think it's a bit like that in like sport and like trying to kick out racism.
Mm.
Like they say that they want to kick out racism, but then, you know, fans will be caught and like there's like a fine, whereas, you know,
yeah.
they want to leave the Super League and like the punishment is 10 times worse. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to say that what the Super League is yeah. worse than institutional racism.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, you're
priorities,
so right.
priorities yeah, are yeah. always yeah. warped
yeah.
for and, some reason.
And I think knowing. if you're I'm trying to think of what the language is like. I don't lead like that.
Mm.
It's not the way I. Like, I don't lead with that. I don't yeah. lead with optics.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not concerned with that. I'm concerned yeah, yeah. with, like, what I can say is the change I made.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's things in my way of getting to the change that benefits the greater good, that's highly frustrating for a personality like mine because I can't... I need a logical reason as to why we're doing that versus the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the right thing, I'm not talking about from a moral compass perspective, I'm yeah. thinking from a value add perspective.
So you know, you've spoken about bureaucracy being like a big barrier. How do you overcome the bureaucracy? Is it something you've been able to overcome?
Not always. Mm. Sometimes I've had to decide that I've had to make a decision, as difficult as it is, to leave something
mm-hmm.
because it's not where my strengths are going to
excel.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest lessons I've ever learned in just in life, but mainly around business, is I can only be me. Like I can try and do it your way for a little bit. Mm. If it's to the greater good, by all means, I'm going to do it. I won't just try it. I'll go full steam ahead and do it.
Yeah.
But if it's genuinely like so at odds with my intuition, my instincts, my ethical values, like my values generally, I cannot bring myself to do it.
Mm.
And then I become in the minds of others, like a disruptor. And some people love disruptors and others are like, no, 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 no. And so they clamp down around you and it makes it more difficult. And so I think there is, and I think what I've learned in all my roles, because if you think about the roles in the City of London, the Commission and others that I hold, like that's about tradition often.
Mm.
And what you want to do is bring people on the journey with you without them feeling that they're losing the things that feel like their tradition, mm. feel like their safety. Mm-hmm. And so you can overcome it, but they have to be people that also see that you are there to to future-proof that tradition.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Rather than undermine it or disregard it. And I think that requires empathy. So you can put yourself in the shoes of the person you're trying to convince. I think stakeholder management sounds really like business bookie, but that is so important. Mm. And what I mean by that is anytime you want anybody to do anything for you, ask yourself, like, what problem does this solve for them? Or and what value does this add? And if you're not clear on those things, think again about that conversation. Mm. Because what you need to try and remember is everyone is managing someone else's expectations, whether that is a business person with a supplier or customer, or whether that is your CEO managing a board, right? And then the chair is managing the expectations of the board downwards and the CEO, right? So you always got to think, if I want this from my CEO, what problem does that solve for the organization that he needs to lead, or she needs to lead, or they need to lead? And then equally, what problem and what value will it add? And how, when that person then goes and communicates that messaging, how are they going to communicate that in a way that the people that are receiving it, who they have to manage, feel there's a problem solved and a value add? And I don't think anyone's ever taught that.
No.
So sometimes they just go, this is what I would like. And you're like, and what has ever given you the impression that the person on the receiving end has any concern for what you would like? Nice people might, but like, just because they're just giving people. But large proportion of people, unfortunately, just don't work that way.
You know, kind of off the back of that, to anybody who's potentially listening to this podcast and, you know, they've never heard of some of these roles, but like they want to get involved, becoming a commissioner or a counsellor or whatever is below that, so many roles. Like, how can you, what advice would you give to people to get their foot in the door?
Read everything about them first.
Okay.
So, and if reading's challenging for you, audio books or YouTube, just like put into YouTube, you know, interview the commissioner, like try and find as much information as you can about the role. And then you have to think about this. All the roles I hold that obviously are not my business have high profiles. What that means is they have high accountability. And the only people you are shortchanging when you take those roles for your personal positioning and gain is the people you're supposed to serve. So the biggest challenge I've had in my career is people taking up roles because of the profile it provides them, the opportunity it provides them. When it's public serving, that jars with me a bit.
Yeah.
So I kind of think, like, we don't need that person in that role. In that role, we need the person who can't sleep at night thinking about how the decisions they make impact complete strangers. We can't have someone in that role who is thinking, if I do this, the next job gets me 300K. So then there's jobs that you can do that where it doesn't matter so much about like the decisions you make.
Yeah.
But don't take the public ones when actually people need the ones in those positions to really care about a complete stranger and how they're impacted by it. And typically, like, people don't often care about things until they impact them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even when we talk about disability, most people don't think about disability until they learn or meet somebody with a disability, or their child has a disability. Like, they just don't consider it. Yeah. This doesn't even come into their brain. Like, so that's what I mean by, you have to be someone though that would sit in politics or in the government or sit in the City of London or be a commissioner and go, I may never have someone in my friendship group or family who has this need, but I'm sat here and I need to think about people who have that need.
Yeah.
So that is a big tip. So go and do the research, but don't get blinded by the lights, because that's not what we need in those roles.
Yeah, 100%.
And then also, when you go into those roles, they're not easy. So you can't go into them for that either. So sometimes people go into them and they just coast because they're fed up.
Yeah.
You kind of need an energy in those roles that is unrelenting.
Yeah.
So I'd say really do your research and don't chase titles, because, and if it's more
chase
about
outcomes,
chase the outcomes. And like, if you want a lucrative like role, there's other ways to get, like, take it from this entrepreneur.
That
you can get lots and lots and lots and lots of money
in
places where you don't have to think about these things, like on behalf of lots of people. You can think about that when you're having a chat with your mates, but don't take the positions if you don't care.
with all these public sector roles that we've been discussing, what would you say is the most rewarding aspect of the roles?
You're never there for yourself. And some people might think that's crazy. Like, turning up every day and it's like, what's in this for me? But I like that. I like that I'm in the room and I'm talking on behalf of someone who's not in the room as accurately as I can about their experience because I've listened to their experiences. Yeah. So it's rewarding that you can go into an organisation and say, on behalf of the people that aren't in the room, this is an experience they have. And so that process really badly impacts them. So can we do something about that? And then you go and you look back at that organisation, and as a result of that small change, sometimes it's such a small change, like more people from that background or with that lived experience are now working in that space.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my goodness, they got promoted to MD. That's really important to me. And interestingly, when I was setting up the business, I was a journalist, right? So I would be at the BAFTAs, the Brits, the Oscars, the Grammys, raving with like all these people that you like would get really excited about because they're funny and famous or whatever. And I didn't feel any real joy, to be honest. Like, I loved my friends that I made, like that were other journalists. And I liked that I'd get an interview with someone, an honest interview about something. I liked that. But I'd like leave there and I'd ring someone and say, you know, you've got a job at RDF Television. And the phone would be silent and I'd be like, are you still there? And they're crying.
Really?
Like, because they're like, I can't believe I got it. I can't believe I got it. Because that is way more rewarding than like an interview with like, I don't want to say a celebrity name because I don't want to offend them in case they see it. But with someone that I would have like sat and spoke to. And I would have enjoyed that by all means. I would have thought, oh, they're great or whatever. And quite inspiring. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to speak to inspiring people. But then when you realise that you've actually changed a course of direction for someone. And once it only takes one thing often. And then the person's off. Like, it just takes someone going, I see a first commissioner in her. And you're like, what's a commissioner?
Yeah.
I want to know about that. Like, someone just takes one thing.
It's way more rewarding than an interview with Michael Parkinson. I'm all right. No, I'm joking.
It's so funny because I met him like twice.
Oh, you have, yeah.
Like, when he does like an audience with him, you know, you know, like when someone becomes really established.
Yeah.
You do that.
And like David Letterman on Netflix.
Yeah, those sorts of things. And yeah. I went and said hello to him. And I was like, when I was a kid, and the man is like, but I don't think he thought this girl was going to come up to him at the end of the session. When I was a kid, I wanted to be just like you. I mean, he had like a totally different audience group. In but I just thought his face was like, is she having me on? Like, is she taking the mic out of me? But it wasn't.
You weren't. Yeah. So you've spoken about the most rewarding thing being obviously seeing the joy in people as able to land roles and, you know, discover things that they thought might not be available to them. What would you say the most stressful part of what you do is?
I've got quite a few like live frustrations that I think sometimes can be detrimental. So I think that sometimes the discourse in communications, whichever media form that is, it doesn't always have the best impact. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is, for example, if we think about individuals who are trans men or trans female, they make up a proportion of society. When their rights are compromised, we need to have a conversation about that and we need to address that. And then what can happen is the discourse around that becomes so elevated, right, that you get individuals in organisations that become frustrated at the individual. And often it's challenge that's a challenge and that's also unhelpful. And the reason I say that is because their frustrations are coming from a discourse external to the actual person that they're working with. So that person who's trans male, trans female, just wants to get up like everybody else does, go to work, earn a living, get on with their day. But because there's been this discourse going on in the world, and they may absolutely have an opinion on what's happening, but then sometimes they become the subject of challenge when no one's asked them what their view was. They haven't said anything to you about it. No. They actually just want to get on with it.
No.
But because that's all going on, for the person who's not a part of, that's kind of under the radar, is not a part of that debate, they become like pulled into this feeling of, why have we got to give you that? What about us? Mm. And it's like, I didn't ask you for anything, actually. asked you for nothing.
Sounds very similar to like racism.
But that's what I mean. I tried not to use racism as an example because I didn't want people to think that's the obvious place I'm going to go to based on you and I. It's in your gender identity. It's in sexual orientation. It comes, you know, whether you're disabled, neurodivergent, whether you're an ethnic minority, your faith, you know. Anti-Semitism is live. Like, there's all of these things. And I just think sometimes the discourse externally, like, makes it like a challenge internally, when actually what we're saying in the workplace is we want to level the playing field so that the best people can get an opportunity to be hired, promoted. Mm. It's not for me, like Joanna, to determine by how you feel about different people and their views, their values and their lived experiences. Mm. I'm never going to win that because I can't get in your head. So as I say, you could sit here saying you're anti this, you're anti that, you're anti this, and do everything that says that you're complicit in a problem. So there's no point in me trying to police your thoughts. Mm-hmm. All I'm trying to say is, bio though, when someone comes for an interview, can you just look at their skills?
Yeah.
You don't have to agree with their faith. Mm-hmm. You just have to look at their skills. And so the bit I'm finding really frustrating is the debate has moved from what I was starting off doing like 18 years ago before it became diversity, inclusion, equity, and it was just about underrepresentation. It's moved from trying to level the playing field to like a measurement of your moral compass. And like, it's almost a bit like you can come in as long as you agree. Like, but even faiths have differing views. Mm. So if I want to respect everybody and their differences, there's a point when I have to accept views aren't going to always align, I don't take from that person and give it to that person. I'm just supposed to create a respectful environment where all those views can work. And so sometimes that is so frustrating that you've got big pressure put on people in businesses to speak on a matter that actually they didn't say they had a view they wanted to share with you about this, like, or that they even necessarily agree with the debate that's happening. And then what's gone on is, diversity's gone, like, it's the conversation can sometimes go to there's diversity and then there's a white male. Mm. And that white male doesn't have a right to say a word about anything. Mm. I don't want to hear anything from the white male because we're talking about diversity now, right? And it's like, that's also really unhealthy.
Yeah.
Like, because people have identities and I don't know from looking at you anything about you. I recognize there is white privilege, obviously, but like, other than that, I don't know the other things. So I just think that we just sometimes need to be careful that. Because then what happens is that people will defend their position because they'll go, you have no idea about,
and
like,
it causes a whole
and that does thing. That causes a distraction from the challenge, which was we wanted to actually get to a level playing field. Sometimes that distraction's healthy. People need to have a conversation. But my bigger problem with that is that it becomes more divisive than it actually brings together. And what I mean by divisive is it shuts the conversation down rather than encouraging the conversation. Mm-hmm. And encouraging the conversation is really important.
Yeah.
So I can hear things that make me uncomfortable.
You do so many different roles. Do you have any productivity hacks?
First of all, get disciplined about things you're not going to compromise on. I love reformer Pilates. I love horse riding. I love doing beauty treatments. And I love being with my cat. Mm. I love reading crime novels. Mm. They have to be factored into a week to ensure that I'm going to be all right. Mm-hmm. And then things I do to stop distractions, I take notifications off. I have my phone on Do Not Disturb. I have this app. I have ADHD. So I have this app where it's got a picture of a tree and it grows out of the ground. And you're only allowed to go off and do something else when the tree's grown.
Wow.
Because otherwise, I'll go, oh, let me quickly, oh God, I've got, oh, no, no, no. Do you know what I mean? And I'm doing 20 things rather than concentrating on the one. So that's a concentration hack.
So basically you look at the tree and if it's not growing, you have to stay there.
Stay focused on this.
That's really good.
After the tree.
What's the app called?
I'll tell you afterwards.
Yeah. And you got to pay for me to put that in the notes, by the way, sponsorship.
I can probably look at my phone. Should I tell you now?
That's fine. Tell me afterwards.
So that's one. And the other is... asking yourself really strict questions, like, I ask this question, will it make me better? Will it get me where I'm trying to go? And if it kind of isn't like doing that, do I need to do it today?
Mm-hmm. I love it. I really love it. I think we know the answer to this, but do you enjoy what you do?
I love what I do. It doesn't even feel like a job, which is why it's easy to pick up so many other things and not even think about whether or not you're paid for them. I'm an empath and I'm highly sensitive. So in any situation, I have to be really careful about me in situations. So what I mean by that is I'll pick up how somebody else is feeling, and I won't just pick it up. I start to feel it. Mm-hmm. And so it can make my day heavier than the average person maybe who works in this space. So you obviously need a lot of empathy anyway. So if anyone that like wants to do this work, like I remember talking to social workers and they were talking about like their roles, and they were telling me some stories, and I was thinking, I could never do that.
Yeah.
Like, because I find this hard.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. Like, yeah. And you can imagine that's the sort of, based on what I said, that's the sort of role I should want to do, right? But my heart couldn't take it.
Yeah, of course.
I couldn't take that. Yeah, like, so you just got to know, I think, like, the strategies to deal with the bits that aren't easy.
You've mentioned that you do horse riding, you've mentioned your cat, you've mentioned your Pilates. How else do you unwind with everything that you do?
My friends, like hang out with my friends who are hilarious, my partner obviously, and I like funny films that are like, they're I've got really strange humour, so they're like like funny in like a dry way. Like I love musicals, music, friends, family, food. Love food. How can I put that last? Like eating. It sounds like there's no space for that, but literally I go to horse riding often and I adore the horses, and like my cat's everything to me. Like if you follow me on Instagram, he's everywhere. So, yeah. So like, I do make time for those things. Like,
yeah.
And that's why I say you've got to ask yourself, because you could be at everything. In all of those roles, you could be at dinner every night, and you've got to think, like, what would I rather do? Like, watch a film with my other half today. And then also, if you know there's lots of things coming up, going, well, if I do all of that, I won't get to see these people. I won't get to horse ride. So you've got to make choices mm-hmm. about, like, what's a priority mm-hmm. and keep the things that are important to you the priority
yeah.
and make everything else, like, work around that.
You gave some advice for people who potentially wanted to get into the industry. Just as a general question, what's the best bit of advice you can give to the listener today?
Oh, there's quite I can give three. They stick with me all the time. The first is two ears, one mouth. Use them in that proportion, which is ironic because I can't stop talking. But when you go into those spaces and you're not supposed to be talking, try your best to do the two ears for listening. Play to your strengths. Because someone said to me once, if you go to your strengths, if you work on your weaknesses, you just become strong. Mm-hmm. If you play to your strengths, you become unique. Mm-hmm. Unique is what you sell. That mm-hmm. uniqueness is what is your currency in any exchange. So stick to that. And then my other one is like once you know better, try and do better.
Mm.
I think that's important with diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Wow.
Don't be sad that you don't know and beat yourself up about that. You know now, so now we do better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and no EDI professional is perfect at understanding the intricacies of the myriad of ways that people from different walks of life will show up, or what language works for one person may not for another, right?
Mm.
So you've just got to forgive yourself. And now I know better, I can do better the next time. I think that's important.
And I've had somebody on the podcast recently, a lot of people said similar thing. And I think, you know, coming back to, you know, working on your strengths, there's only one you.
Mm.
And you will be the best you. Nobody will be able to pretend to be you better than you.
Yeah.
So there's no point trying to be other people. Just be the best you.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, those 3 points were great.
That's the competition. The competition should be like who you were a moment ago, who you were yesterday.
Mm.
Not anybody else. And I think also, if you're like me and you overthink, it can be your own. You can be your own worst critic and your own worst enemy.
Mm.
That starts to become unhealthy.
Mm.
So you just kind of have to accept what you can't change.
Mm.
So there's going to be things about yourself that you're not going to sing from the rooftops that you're like.
Yeah.
I think you have to work on being better at them. But then there's a point of acceptance
that
maybe that's always going to be something that only becomes strong.
Like my left foot in football. Joe, this has been great. Final question before we get into the quick fire round. My left foot it's not even good. You've mentioned, obviously, you've been working for a long time, you know, the past 18 years, I think we've kind of covered today. Where does Joanna see herself in 5 years, 10 years?
Good question. So I'd like to obviously become a magistrate.
Yeah.
I'd like to infiltrate the House of Lords in some way, shape, or form. But I'd like to be a human rights lawyer.
Would you? Yeah. Whoa, that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I got into
human rights law. Have you?
So I'm gonna
congratulations.
Do it. Thank you. I'm going to do it part time.
Wow.
So in my next, like my 40 decade, I'd like to be writing the issues around the world. Basically,
wow.
If I can.
Wow, you've heard it here first.
And this holds me accountable.
Yeah, and when we're a global international podcast, we're going to have Joanna back on to see if she's lived up to it.
Okay. And you will be that, by the way.
There we go. I'll receive that. Joanna, this has been great. We're going to go into a quick fire round before we wrap up. Okay. You ready for it?
Yes.
Work from home or work from the office?
Home.
Easy. Money or happiness?
Happiness.
Favorite day of the week?
Saturday.
Time in a group or time alone?
Time alone.
Would you rather travel to the past or future?
Future.
Favorite book?
Anything by Agatha Christie.
Okay.
Or Peter James.
Okay. Night out or night in?
Night in.
Who has it easier, men or women?
Oof. I don't like that one.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I don't like that one. You know why? It's just too many things in it. It's too layered.
It's the empath in you.
It's too. I can't bring Good myself answer. To say
that's
that,
fine. Yeah. Name a book you think everyone should read.
Why has nobody told me this before?
Sounds amazing. I might actually look you up. And then, are you listening to any good podcasts at the moment?
Do you know what? I do love a podcast. I listen to Stephen Bartlett, obviously, which I think everybody does. I listened today to Gary Neville's one.
Yeah, the overlap with Dele Alli.
Overlap, yeah. I love, when it's interesting, I'm fascinated by elite sports people's like attitudes to life. So I'm always fascinated by that. I read Tuesday True Crime Podcast. I listen to that every Tuesday. And I've started listening to Crouch Therapy.
No.
Is so that with Peter Crouch
and his wife.
Did the Stephen Bartlett thing. I became obsessed with Peter Crouch and then I followed his podcast.
He's got a documentary on Amazon Prime.
Has he?
Yeah. That Peter Crouch doc. You're welcome.
Oh my God, thank you. I'm a bit obsessed with how he thinks and how he comes across and stuff. So I've been starting to listen to that. No one else likes it.
No, he's funny.
And sometimes if I really want to watch something that's light, on YouTube, I've got it's a guilty pleasure, but I've watched like Philly and Chunks.
Oh, did you? Oh my goodness. Do you know what? Each to their own.
But when I watch it like every once in 6 months, for example, but if I'm like doing something, I'm like, I just want something light.
Mm.
I might watch some of their
silly.
Or I love Mo. Mo
Gilligan.
I'll watch a load of his videos or something.
Joanna, this has been great. Thank you so much for today. It's been wonderful. We do have a closing tradition here on the podcast. Knowing what you know now, everything you've been through, everything we've discussed, what advice would you give to your 16-year-old self? And would you still be doing the same thing?
My advice would be give yourself a break. The world's problems aren't all yours to solve.
Mm.
So I'd say give yourself a break. Would I still be doing this? Yeah, I think what I've done is, I think I've learned who I am and I've found a job that lets me be who I am.
Yeah.
And like live all the things I think.
People don't always do that though.
Yeah.
So fair play.
Whereas I think other people have maybe gone like, how do I get to this? Mm. A job like that gets me there. Whereas I've been thinking like, who am I and how can I make who I am help?
Mm-hmm.
I think, so I probably would have ended up doing the same thing.
Joanna, where can people find you?
So I'm on LinkedIn,
yeah.
Joanna Obey. I'm on Instagram, Joanna Obey. And Twitter, and I do that because people aren't always on Twitter. And for some reason, they're probably the places. And the business is www.createbluemoon.com.
There we go. We're going to link everything we've discussed today in the show notes, from the commissioner to the City of London. I'm still getting it wrong.
I'm gonna go and get the correct things because this is supposed to
delivery.
Ignore. Yeah, delivery. All of the formal wording. I'm gonna get that because this is supposed to make sure that people actually know, and I should have made sure I had that. So that's a flaw in me. So I'm gonna get the exact wording and make sure your listeners have it.
I appreciate that, Joanna. but yeah, like I said before, thank you so much for doing this today.
No, thanks for having me.
I feel enlightened. Like I said, this is hopefully the first of many visits on the podcast.
Yeah.
And we can dive into some other things at a later time. But for now, guys, if you've made it to the end of the show, thank you. Make sure to like, share, subscribe, comment, do all of that. This has been What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know.